This is a download from the Scottish Railway Preservation Society.
Just putting some lights on the engine now. We've got two lights showing it's a passenger train.
This is Soundworks, the magazine for railway enthusiasts around the world, coming to you from Bowness in Scotland. Hello and welcome to the fifth edition of Soundblast, the audio magazine of the Scottish Railway Preservation Society at Bowness in Scotland. I'm David, by the way, and I'm in the signal box just now to allow my colleague, Sandy Simpson, who normally pulls the levers here, to get to the other end of the yard for the arrival of the Midland compound. Today is a big day. The compound is one of three new exhibits here. The others are the Duke of Sutherland Saloon, which is also on loan from the National Railway Museum at York, and Gordon Highlander, which is on loan from the Glasgow Museum of Transport. Sandy is watching number 1000 being unloaded, and he has done some background on the compounds.
The famous compound locomotives of Midland Railway Company were developed from a series of five locomotives, numbers 2631 to 2635, introduced in 1902 by Samuel W. Johnson, which had a three-cylinder compound arrangement on the Smith system, with one high-pressure inside cylinder and two low-pressure outside cylinders, plus Smith's starting arrangement, reinforced working, and, for the first two locomotives, independent control of high-pressure and low-pressure valve gears. From 1905 onwards, Johnson's successor, Richard Dealey, built an enlarged and simplified version, eliminating all the Smith refinements, whilst fitting his own starting arrangement, making the engines simpler to drive. These locomotives were originally numbered 1000 to 1029, but the 1907 renumbering scheme, the five Smith-Johnson locomotives became 1000 to 1004, and the Dealey compounds 1005 to 1034, 10 more of these being added in 1908 and 1909. The original Johnson locomotives were all subsequently renewed as Dealey compounds, including the now preserved number 1000, which was rebuilt to Dealey's revised design with a superheater in 1914. Numbered 1000 to 1044 by both the Midland and LMS companies, British Railways renumbered the Midland series of compounds 4100 to 41044 after nationalisation in 1948. Number 1000 in full Midland Railway livery arrived in Bowness by road on 17th of May as part of an exchange deal, as Scottish Railway Society Chairman John Evans explains.
The story is basically that the National Railway Museum surprisingly have not got a classic Scottish locomotive in their collection at all. And we had a request from them to borrow Maud from us for a three-year period to fill that role in the Great Hall. Now, Maud is a typical British Railways 060 goods loco, many, many thousands of them built for use all over the UK. And Maud was built in 1891 in the North British Railway Company's Cowlairs Works. The interesting thing about Maud is that she was requisitioned during the First World War and went across to the Western Front in 1917. She worked there on supply trains to the troops in the front line. And to commemorate this service, Maud was named Maud after one of the military leaders of the day, Lieutenant General Sir Frederick Stanley Maud, spelt with an E on the end, not as the lady's name. Maud returned back to this country in 1919 and spent the rest of its working life hauling goods trains on Scotland's tracks. It was withdrawn from Bathgate Shed in 1966, and so is a local engine, and is very representative of the sort that worked into Bowness. It's going to the National Railway Museum for 3 years on an exchange loan, and during those 3 years, we are hoping to actively seek to raise the funds to restore her to working order so that she can take her place once more on the Bowness and Kinneil Railway branch hauling passenger trains.
John Evans, chairman of the Scottish Railway Preservation Society. Now, you might suppose that everyone would be delighted with this temporary exchange. But one man was disappointed, for former British Railways driver James Stephen, who had driven Maud during her years at Bathgate Shed, made a special trip to Bo'ness to see his former charge, a few days after Maud went to York. He explained to David Bytheway.
There must have been about 30 or 40 steam engines at Bathgate, you know, then, when I was a fireman.
And what do you remember about Maud?
I fired it, that's all.
Was it a good engine? Was it a good engine to fire?
Oh, they were all much the same, you know what I mean.
So what was the shift? What time do you start in the morning?
Oh, started all hours round the clock. All hours round the clock. 2 and 3 in the morning sometimes.
How old were you when you joined the railways?
16.
16. And then what did you start as?
Cleaner.
And what did you do as a cleaner?
You cleaned the engines.
You cleaned, aye, and how did you do that?
With paraffin and other liquids, you know, oils, different oils and waste, you know, and you cleaned them. Uh-huh. And you stay there and you get stepped up to a fireman. Usually in the summertime was the most time because everybody was going on holidays, so they had to step the cleaners up to be a fireman, mm-hmm, to fire the steam engines, uh-huh, you know, because people were taking holidays. Uh-huh. And you got promoted up to be a fireman, you know, and you got a wage rise at, when you started for the cleaner to be a fireman, you know.
So what age were you when you were a fireman?
Oh, well, I was here. I was roughly a fireman, I would say, for about 17, 18, but I had to go into the army for a national serviceman. Uh-huh. See, I came 18. I went aside at 16, came 18, got called up for the army. I joined the King's Own Scottish Borders, and when I came back out, I went back to my job again. My job was still there for me, mm-hmm, after I went in at 18, came back at 20, mm-hmm, and I went in back onto the railway again, and got promoted, you know, went higher up and higher up. Well, you go cleaner, fireman, driver.
Mm-hmm. And what did you end up as?
I ended up as a fireman. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I didn't fire it, you know, but with jobs, mostly pit work were done, you know, mm-hmm, taking the empties into the pits and taking the coal out the pits, you know. Mm-hmm. The pits were all over the place, yeah, in this area. I loved it.
You loved it, eh?
I loved it, but I had to leave after about 17 years because the wages were too low and my family was starting to grow and I had to try and get a better job with more money to feed my children and my wife and children.
James Stephen was talking with David Bytheway. 2011 marks the 50th anniversary of the foundation of the Scottish Railway Preservation Society, and to mark the occasion, the Society held a special ceilidh at which Steve Davis was the guest of honour. No, not Steve Davis of the snooker world, but Steve Davies, the director of the National Railway Museum in York. However, despite the disparity in size between the National Railway Museum and the Scottish Railway Museum, Steve is no stranger to Bo'ness, as he told the indefatigable David Bytheway.
This is not your first time at Bo'ness. In fact, you've got strong connections with the SRPS.
I have indeed. In fact, wherever I've gone in my army career, I've always looked for something to excite my senses and help me promote my hobby. And my posting to Craigie Hall, just outside Edinburgh, as chief of staff of the division there, as soon as I looked at the map and realised that Bo'ness was so close, came down and was a long-standing member of the Monday Night Gang. And I have to say, it was a great antidote to the trials and tribulations of looking after half of the UK mainland. Mm.
How does an army officer become in charge of the National Railway Museum?
Yes, well, it might seem a counterintuitive question. I mean, I'm a lot of people think I'm an engineer. I'm not. I'm an infantry officer and the Queen's Lancashire Regiment, principally. But I'm rabidly passionate about railways. I was fortunate to grow up in Lancashire, so saw steam right through to 1968. Big influence on me was my grandfather, who was a footplate crew at Lower Darwin Engine Shed. And he was Royal Engineers Operating Department as well. So there's a bit of both there. He was a big influence on my life. But I suppose in the 60s I wasn't really a railway enthusiast, but then in the early 70s, that sort of the incurable disease, as we all know, it kicked in. I pursued my hobby quite passionately throughout my entire life. And I suppose I came to people's attention because of Sierra Leone. I've been heavily involved in preservation. But in Sierra Leone, I was based out there as advisor to the president in rebuilding the Ministry of Defence, not the bricks and mortar, but its function as a Department of State. I saw the opportunity to set up the Sierra Leone National Rowing Museum. That, in due course, helped to soften an otherwise frightening CV to a civilian. And there's more to it than that, but, you know, I was sort of partially chased, and the rest, they say, is history. And I'm now running possibly the most fantastic rowing museum in the world.
One of the things you've done is to bring more Scottish involvement into York, isn't that right?
It is, yeah. It's long before I got to York, I'd always sort of quizzed as to why there's no Scottish mainline built, Scottish mainline operated loco in the National Collection. And there is a danger at York of York being viewed as the English National Rowing Museum. In terms of ephemera and the small collections, Scotland is well represented. But when it comes to the big stuff, locos, nothing at all. In fact, we've only got one Welsh-built loco, which is the Taff Vale engine, now at Llangollen. So one of my first ports of call was actually to come up to Bowness and to see whether or not a deal could be struck. And I'm delighted to say that Maud was a willing victim, as it were, and she is now has got pride of place in the Great Hall on the turntable. I've worked out that since she arrived at York, she's done 30 miles. Mm-hmm. The front end's done 30 miles. I think the cab's done half a mile. Mm-hmm. For those who understand geometry, they'll know what I mean. Mm-hmm. But she's telling an important story, and I do aspire. It's just setting the scene for the future here, but I do aspire for there always to be a Scottish engine. So once Maud comes back, we'll be hoping to do a deal. And of course, it was a fair swap. We sent the Duke of Sutherland's saloon here, which is absolutely right and proper, and the Midland compound, number 1000, will be coming here in the very near future. So,
but it didn't make it here today.
It didn't make it here today. That's because the compound was part of a sort of complicated three-way move, which was going to include Cornwall going from Shildon to the Severn Valley. The Severn Valley now don't need Cornwall, and so actually we could have made it happen a bit sooner, but it'll get here.
And in the future, more English engines coming to Scotland?
You could argue that Flying Scotsman is an English engine, couldn't you, despite the name? We will look, I think, to promote the strongest possible relationship between the National Rowing Museum and Scotland.
Thanks very much indeed.
And that pretty well wraps up this edition of Sound Blast. You can contact us online at www.srps.org.uk/soundblast, all lowercase. That's www.srps.org.uk/soundblast. Or you can write to us at Soundblast, two words this time with initial capitals, Soundblast, SRPS, Union Street, Bowness, West Lothian, EH519AQ, Scotland. The tireless roving reporter, editor and producer has been David Bytheway. And I'm Sandy Simpson, wishing you all that you wish yourself from everyone here at the Scottish Railway Preservation Society at Bowness in Scotland.